Hans Memling has been generally regarded as one of the second-tier masters of the Northern Renaissance, beneath his great predecessors Roger van der Weyden and Jan van Eyck. But a collection of his portraits that's been touring throughout Europe has changed many people's minds. And now, for the first time ever, they can be seen on this side of the Atlantic, on 70th Street and 5th Avenue at the Frick Museum. I'm very pleased to welcome the Frick's Colin Bailey to my show today. Hello. And how long is this show going to be at the Frick?
It runs until to New Year's Eve, to the 31st of December.
How difficult was it getting this collection to North America?
Well, you realize that, of course, we are showing single works or maybe two works from many institutions.
Mostly institutions? Are there any Memlings in private collections?
There is. There is. In this exhibition, there is one Memling in a private collection, but the rest are from museums. And the show took about 4 years to put together. There are 18 different lending institutions, and we were extremely lucky with how many works were lent.
There are a couple at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, but they're not in the show.
Some bequests have certain conditions. In fact, the Frick Collection cannot lend works acquired by the founder, Henry Clay Frick, who died in 1919. Happily for us and for this exhibition, the collection bought the Memling that's on the cover of the book in 1968. The Altman pictures at the Met cannot travel.
And even if they can, in the past, wasn't there a certain reluctance to put together shows like this because these paintings are so fragile?
Absolutely. You know, they are painted in oil, but on wood, and wood is, of course, very susceptible to changing climates, travel conditions, humidity. It was really only about 20 years ago that the technology, rather simple technology of microclimate boxes, was created to allow smaller panels to travel, and we, in some ways, are the beneficiaries of that.
And you have here two-thirds of his known portraits.
That's right. Memling's entire oeuvre, his entire work, around 100 paintings, and we are bringing, and there are 35 portraits. We have 21 on show at the Frick, so it is a very good portion.
Who were his subjects?
Well, we wish we knew. We certainly know when the name is on the frame, Martin van Nieuwenhove, Gilles Joie. We know who these people are, and occasionally we can even identify someone through attributes and seals and impresa. But in fact, for the vast majority, are portrait of a man, or even more rarely, portrait of a woman.
And yet we assume, I'm sure, that these were prominent people in their day.
Well,
because they're treated that way.
They are treated with tremendous dignity and honor, absolutely. But they're not idealized, and they're not made courtly. Memling tended not to work for the court officials in Burgundy. His sitters, his patrons, were in general bankers, merchants, traders, or patrician, well-born patricians from Bruges itself.
But also people from Italy and Spain, isn't that true?
This is what's very interesting, because Bruges, as a center for international commerce in the 1450s and 60s, attracted a huge number of businessmen from and politicians and diplomats from Italy and Spain. And so, yes, there are several Italian sitters. We don't know who they all are.
And that's significant in art historical terms, which we will get to in a little bit. Did his style and approach to his subjects differ much from other artists of the time?
His compositions are certainly based on those that he would have learnt in Roger van der Weyden's studio. There's a sort of directness that is also taken from Van Eyck, who was in Bruges, and Petrus Christus. Where Memling, I think, is different and distinctive is in a really honest naturalism that seems to shun any type of idealization or manner, and that perhaps is his distinctive handwriting.
And we feel that we recognize these people. They often look like people we know. There's something very modern about them because these faces are real. Although we don't know whether they are likenesses because we don't even know who the people are, we can assume that this is pretty much what they look
like. Well, in fact, at the end of the showing in Bruges, the museum had a competition. They asked people to send in photographs to say who they looked closest to, and apparently there is a dead ringer for the Frick's portrait in Bruges somewhere. So, yes, they do look very lifelike.
In most of these paintings, he's placed his subjects before radiant landscapes, and we are made aware of the relationship between the city, the sitter, and nature. Is that something that had been done before him?
It had been done in religious, in altarpieces and in diptychs and triptychs by Roger van der Weyden. There had been some sense of a life beyond, as it were. But in portraiture, this is really Memling's own contribution, to create a landscape that has elements that we can associate with Bruges or the hinterland of Bruges, and a landscape that seems real rather than in some ways idealized or divine.
And that was seen by other painters and suddenly became a whole new approach to art. When I think of the Mona Lisa, for example, I think of a woman sitting in front of a landscape. Is there a direct relationship?
Well, you've touched upon a very lively issue in art historical circles. For a long time, it was assumed that the Italians had created this sort of human figure in a landscape, that it was a signal part of the Italian Renaissance. However, just the dates don't really bear that out. Many of Memling's portraits from the 1470s that found their way back to their Italian home with the sitter as he left Bruges would have been seen by artists such as Perugino, Verrocchio, Ghirlandaio. And so, yes, the influence actually is north to south.
We also see it in Piero della Francesca, Raphael, Bellini. So do we know whether they actually saw any of these paintings in the flesh? There is a Memling in the Uffizi, isn't there?
There are several Memlings in the Uffizi. There are four Memlings in the Uffizi. You know, it's in some ways a good question. When someone paints a landscape in the background, and an artist as great as Bellini or Raphael, does he have to have seen a Memling before he can do that? You would say no. On the other hand, just to make that step in painting, the fact that there was a model before that opened the door to you is a very important thing in the way these works are constructed.
Wasn't it also true at the time that people tended to follow certain approaches to art? In fact, Roger van der Weyden, if I remember correctly, was credited with breaking down some of the more iconic aspects of Flemish art, putting the Virgin Mary into poses that were not acceptable before he did them. So I would think that if you break a mold, you get some credit for it.
Well, you know, the great writer, general philosopher, artist, Gombrich, who died recently, talked about where the sort of conquest of naturalism as being a series of new right turns. Once an artist can discover a new schemata and create that visually, artists following can then take it and do a step forward. So yes, you can always go back and see how someone like van der Weyden opened the door for Memling.
But also, he was working with portraits and landscapes. Weren't they both considered inferior genres at the time?
Michelangelo would have certainly said so. And indeed, Memling's central activity was as a painter of religious subjects, of public altarpieces, of private diptychs and triptychs, devotional works. And that is what we're trying to stress very strongly in this show, because when you see the diptych of Martin van Nieuwenhove, this young man in perpetual prayer, the Virgin to his right, the function of that image is as a devotional image. So yes, religious art is primary in this culture.
And that was a tradition that went back a long time. We can go back a couple of hundred years before Memling and find paintings of the donors in religious paintings and devotional paintings.
Yes, and in some ways, one of the excitements is when you can see that the tradition having started with religious art, but then in Memling's case particularly, breaking through into a secular world.
Well, he's giving us these very simple paintings, always in the same proportions, or almost always in the same proportions, in which we have a head and the chest, and often just cut off hands at the bottom. Sometimes the hands actually lean on the frame. He loves to play with frames. He has hats going past the frames as well. But there seems to be a formula here, and the difference is the people involved and the landscapes behind them.
Well, a formula in that it's quite probable that Memling and his workshop had templates, drawings, cartoons, as it were, that he would use to map out, to begin work on a composition. But what is remarkable is the different qualities. And very rarely are they made overly beautiful, overly fine, overly precious. The different qualities of character that come through within a rather restrained sobriety, which is also a hallmark of his work. And the fact that you've pointed out that you feel that you've seen some of these faces around you, this is a tremendous insight into the way the human form can be portrayed.
Was he also doing something different when he put the rest of the hands on the bottom of the painting? I mean, I associate that sort of thing with Mantegna much later in the Italian Renaissance, but I can't think of any artist who did it then.
Van Eyck is a very potent source for Memling. Van Eyck had moved to Bruges towards the end of his career and then had established himself as the preeminent artist in that city. One difference between a Van Eyckian portrait and a Memling portrait is that Van Eyck did not bring the world into the background. He used these plain, very undifferentiated backdrops, which Memling uses as well. He does not only insert the figure in the landscape. Some of his most beautiful portraits have this unidentified single-color background as well.
He was born in Germany, and yet he is considered one of the great Flemish painters. Was that typical? Do we see his German roots in his approach to Flemish art?
Well, if you do, show them to me, because we know that he starts his life in Seligenstadt. He moves and perhaps works with Stefan Lochner in Cologne, who is one of the most forward-looking artists in the early 15th century. And then when he makes his way to Brussels, it's really in Roger van der Weyden's studio workshop, which is the primary center for art in the Netherlands, that he creates a style. And so there, I think, you see the roots. You don't really see much German influence in his painting.
And then he moves north to Bruges. What was Bruges like at the time?
Well, if you visit Bruges today and you see it populated during the day with thousands and thousands of tourists, if you imagine a city as vibrant and as busy as that all the time in the 1460s and 70s, that was Bruges. When the tourists go home in Bruges, it's very, very quiet and very sleepy, and one likes it very much like that. But in Memling's time, Bruges was a very strong hub of the Burgundian Empire and a center for cloth making. That's why many of Memling's sitters, while they're dress is never ostentatious, they're well-dressed. They have fur on their sleeves, they have fine cloth. It was also a center of banking. The Medici Bank had a powerful branch in Bruges, and indeed, Memling's first patrons, Italian patrons, were managers of that bank.
And was all the money the reason that there was a thriving community for artists as well?
I think it must have been. I mean, the number of great artists, Petrus Christus, Memling, and then Gerard David, who were working at all around the same moment at one point, in Bruges, it's a center for manuscript illumination, of sculpture, of stained glass. It was a thriving metropolis, but it was a metropolis that would decline in the last decade of Memling's life. By the 1480s, political strife, economic, in some ways, secession, had led to Antwerp being created as the major center.
Now, Petrus Christus and Gerard David, there are a lot of Gerard Davids at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. They're very different kinds of artists than Memling. Was he considered their equal? Was he painting in a style that was atypical at Bruges?
I think Memling's distinctive style is, and we come back to it, is this humanity and this sense of a sort of believable, immediate presence, which he even brings into his religious pictures. The beautiful Gerhard David at the Frick collection of the Deposition, a large, sorrowing picture, gives you a sense, too, of how a public scale of an altarpiece must change the intimacy that the viewer can expect of a picture.
Well, these are all commissioned paintings, and I read somewhere that it's assumed that Memling made the sitters look better in the great tradition of portrait painters who make the jewels bigger.
But how would we know?
And the wrinkles smaller. But we don't know.
How could we know? I mean, we don't know.
We don't know about the chronology of these paintings either, do we?
No, and in fact, the great Memling scholar, Dirk de Vos, has, and I've cited this, he's spoken of Memling's seamless chronology, exasperatingly seamless. A work that was dated in 1472 doesn't necessarily look that much different from a work that we know is done in 1487. It seems that once he arrives at a style or a series of styles, he has, as it were, arrived at a distinctive way of handling. The differences, and these have been very well discovered by scientists and conservation and scholars who do this sort of work, are in the way the painting is brought up, the way the underdrawing and preparations are done. And in general, as he is more confident and more used to doing portraiture, his under-modelling, under-drawing becomes more spontaneous and more free.
You have in the catalog some pages that are devoted to that, a lot of x-rays. Were these, obviously the personal portraits were commissioned by the sitters. What about the religious paintings? Did the church commission them, or were they also commissioned by private individuals?
We of course, for this project, the Neuwenhofer diptych is a private commission. So we're not representing the ecclesiastical commissions, but in fact, the St. John's Hospital, which you can visit in Bruges, and which you should visit because it's still the central repository of Memling's work, the St. John's Hospital, to which Memling was attached in the 1470s, was his major donor throughout his life. The altarpiece and various members of that community commissioned their own diptychs and triptychs from him.
Because people wanted to pray in the hospital, obviously they wanted their loved ones to survive, or they wanted to survive themselves.
They wanted to survive, and they were...
There were a lot of plague at the time.
Well, also, remember, life was... religious observance was permeated all aspects of life then.
Well, his teacher, Roger van der Weyden, did a famous religious painting and altarpiece in Bonn in the other part of the Burgundian Empire. So I guess this was part of a long tradition in the famous Hospice de Bonn.
Yes. In some ways, the sense of duty and observance was constant from birth to grave. And that's why the autonomous, independent portrait that we see as such a usual part of art is a novelty in Memling's time.
We didn't mention that any number of these paintings were painted to be seen together, but they haven't been for centuries. And now they have been paired once again.
Well, what is tremendously moving in a way is to see works that clearly were done more or less at the same moment, more or less with the same ideas in the back of the artist's mind, and how they do act as a sort of unified gallery.
He lived until the end of the 1500s, right?
He dies in 1494.
And then his work goes into kind of decline for a while, rediscovered the end of the 19th century. What did people think of it during all of those years?
You know, I mean, it's a very large question. It's a good question. Memling was gradually subsumed as a German artist. So in the 18th and 19th century, when his work was for the first time looked at, he was seen as a precursor of Dürer. It was only really in the 19th century when artists began to look at documents and the churches in Bruges that his artistic personality was created. Many pictures in this exhibition were acquired as by Antonello da Messina, the great southern Italian artist.
And even ascribed to him. Colin Bailey of the Frick Museum, thank you so much for talking about Hans Memling. The show runs through the first of the year.
Thank you
very
much.
And it's wonderful.
Thank you.